Hey, everybody, welcome in. Thanks for being with us today. As usual, right at this time of year, we are knee-deep in political season, and today we're turning our attention to the East Bonner County Library. That's our library, the library that we love, and there's one position open on the Board of Trustees. Two candidates are vying for that position. One is the incumbent, one is the challenger, and we have the challenger, Stacy Rodriguez, with us today. I have to announce to you, I don't know what's going on with our incumbents, but as of yesterday, incumbent Susan Shea was scheduled to be here, but she notified me by text that she would not be here. So I texted her back and I asked, may I know why? And she didn't even answer me. And that happened with a couple of the incumbents for the hospital board. So I don't know. It might be a new, pandemic that's going around with our incumbents that they don't want to talk to you, to voters. And I'm going to be very direct about it. This is the first time in the over 20 years that I have done this and had the privilege to sit here and talk to candidates that they have just flat out said, no, not going to come in, don't think it's important, don't want to talk to the voters. You know, the incumbents are not talking to me. The candidates are actually not talking to me. They're talking to you. And that's why I think it is so important. So your incumbent, Susan Shea, is not here. The whole show will be with challenger Stacy Rodriguez. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. And with all of that said, we're going to take our first break right now.
The Pondere Winery, located at 301 Cedar in historic downtown Sandpoint, is a true experience. With award-winning wines, handmade cuisine, local artwork, live music, and a unique gift shop, our tasting room has a little something for everyone. This month, our walls will be adorned with beautiful artwork by Laura Blue. It's Wine Club Release Month again for you wine thieves out there as well. Kylie and I have some special selections we cannot wait to share with you. Go to powine.com or check our social media for a list of musicians and all the events happening in May. The Pondere Winery, a Sandpoint institution for the past 28 years.
Healthy plants for happy gardeners are grown with love and care at the Flower Farm. What better way to show mom your love than a gift of flowers that will bring her joy all summer? Come on out and choose a spectacular hanging basket. We have a great selection unlike any you'll find elsewhere. Moms will receive a free plant on Mother's Day. The Flower Farm on Selly Road, just north of Sandpoint. Open 9 to 5 daily and 10 to 4 on Sundays, or online at sandpointflowerfarm.com.
Come on, relax with us on a summer night. Indians baseball makes your future right. We're here to have fun, and that's what we're gonna do.
Tonight, baseball is back at Avista Stadium. Your Spokane Indians open a six-game homestand against the Arizona Diamondbacks affiliate, the Hillsboro Hops. Tonight is Bark in the Park.
Back to the left field wall, going, and it's gone for a home run.
Tonight, your Spokane Indians host our first of five Scraps Bark in the Park nights of the summer. You and your dog get in for just $6, with all proceeds from dog tickets going to local animal shelters. And stick around tonight after the game for the Scraps Puppy Parade. There's baseball through Sunday at Avista Stadium. This Thursday is Les Schwab's Jersey Off the Back night. Friday, Mallory Paint Store presents Armed Forces Appreciation and Fireworks. And this Saturday is another Yolks Family Feast. For tickets and game times, go to SpokaneIndians.com. That's SpokaneIndians.com.
It is gone!
It's a home run for you.
Tonight is Scraps Bark in the Park. As always, free parking. For tickets and game times, go to SpokaneIndians.com.
Spring is here, and it's time to see what's new at Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, jewelry, ReadyWise foods, and more. They stock items you won't find anywhere else in our area. They buy, sell, and trade, open weekdays, and located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Pondere. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
Save now with Bi-Mart's latest membership savings book. Arriving exclusively in members' mailboxes this week. Our 16-page book has store-wide savings in every department. Find what you need for spring home projects, indoor and out, for less. Plus, don't forget mom. From greeting cards to hanging baskets, we've got your Mother's Day covered. Save now with our latest savings book at Bi-Mart, your employee-owned membership store.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
All right, everyone, here we go. Say hello and welcome with me to the challenger for the East Bonner County Library District Board of Trustees is Stacy Rodriguez. Stacy, thank you for being here.
Barbara, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I am too. I'm trying to figure out, are you just super brave or, you know, because if some other candidates are falling by the wayside, they don't want to come in and talk to me. So I appreciate your being here talking to the voters.
I am looking forward to talking to the voters very much.
Well, let's start with your background, your education, and your work experience that you are bringing in before we get to the library issues.
I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and I went to the Ohio State University, of which I am still quite fond.
Well, wait a minute. I'm a Fighting Illini from the Illinois Big Ten. Wait a minute. This could get difficult.
At least you're not from Michigan. No offense to any Michigan voters. It's all in good fun. And my mom and I moved to California in the late 70s, where I spent the bulk of my adult life. And I went to grad school there, and I went at night. I worked full-time during the day. I went to school at night. And it was harder to get classes because there weren't so many. And I had one class left to take to get a master's degree in political science. And it was a criminal law class taught by a deputy district attorney from San Diego County. And I never looked back. I thought, this is it. This is what I was meant for, to be a DA and to help people. And I literally left grad school only needing to write my thesis. And I applied to law school immediately. A professor in the master's program said, you're an average student. I was working full time, but you're an average student. You're a B student. You're never going to make it in law school. So after first year, I was first in my class. I earned a full scholarship, and I graduated magna cum laude, and I sent him a photocopy of my diploma. So underestimate me. That will be fun. And as a DA, I prosecuted everything from your basic burglaries, petty thefts, DUIs, and then you work up the chain to more serious cases. So I was a generalist before I became a specialist. Sexual assault, and then family protection, which is child abuse, child molest, and domestic violence, were the bulk of my career. And I can't say there were more rewarding victims to work for than children. They've got nobody to stand up for them, and they're easily taken advantage of, they're vulnerable, and they rely on us. They rely on adults with common sense to make sure they're protected. And I felt it was the best job on earth, and I loved every second of it until the day I retired when I got pregnant at 49, and we had our youngest daughter. That was a surprise. And so I wasn't ready to be done, so I created a course called From the Crime Scene to the Courtroom to help officers investigate better and testify better, and I taught that nationwide. And then for a couple of years, I taught probation officers in California a course I also designed on testifying in court and how to write better reports.
Help our audience understand what other experience you have and how you weave all this together to be such a strong advocate for our library.
I think that one of the things that I bring to the library that nobody else brings is that I am a lawyer and a particular type of lawyer. So I have lawyer skills and I have prosecutor skills with child victims. So as someone who prosecuted hundreds of cases involving child victims, I know that graphically sexual materials are very harmful to children, and we can talk about that more in a bit. But as a lawyer, at the forum, for those who were there, the library submitted questions to each candidate. And one of those questions, question four, I believe, was about HB 314, the bill that the governor vetoed, and it was overridden, or the override was short by one vote. The library's recitation or interpretation of what that bill stood for was so far off base that it was, I will just be gracious and say, clearly they need someone who can interpret statutory law. Because by the way they interpreted it, that any time a parent found trouble with a book their child had been given, the library could be sued. And that is so far from what the bill said. And considering that they're all, I believe, educated people, the bill was not that complex to read. And it clearly did not say that. If that were the case, as I mentioned at the forum, we'd have lawsuits as many as there were parents who didn't like a particular genre of book or type of book. But I can interpret statutes. I can help draft statutes. I can protect them and help them understand what's really going on.
Okay, since you brought up HB 314, let's take a moment and clarify for our audience to know what you're talking about. There was a bill that came up in the legislature, House, and it passed. The House, the Senate, it went to the governor, and he vetoed it. And when it came back for the override, it failed in the override by only one vote. Explain what 314 was actually saying.
Okay. Right before I go into that, I'm going to give you just a tiny little lesson with some of the terms that are being bandied about within this discussion of HB 314 and the library. So picture you're on the pornography highway and you're driving along. At some point, you're going to cross over into the obscenity highway. Once you've done that, you are no longer protected by the First Amendment. So for adults, most pornography is protected by the First Amendment. Obscenity is not for adults and certainly not for children. In the early 70s, I believe, there was a little carve-out made, an exception for school libraries and public libraries to bring in books that dealt with sex ed, so that they wouldn't be violating the obscenity law. So they had a carve-out for obscenity. It's not that the books didn't become obscene when they were in the library or in the school, but they had this carve-out because allegedly they were being used for educational purposes. HB 314 took away that carve-out under a couple of criteria. If you had materials that were harmful to minors, and that is defined by statute, as is obscenity, in our state and federally, if you had those books and either the librarian or library staff directly handed it to a child, or you had not, as a library, taken sufficient measures, reasonable measures to restrict minor access to those materials deemed obscene and harmful to minors, the library, not the librarian, the library could be fined $2,500 if a parent decided to file suit. So there was no criminal penalty like there had been the year before when they tried to run a bill. They changed that. There was a civil penalty, means no jail, toward the institution, not the staffers. And that's why we thought our proposal was so reasonable, such a great compromise.
I think the audience would benefit from understanding that, first of all, there is a definition of obscenity, and it isn't that any parent can walk into the library and say, I don't like that book, that book is obscene in my eyes, and therefore restrict the book. It has to meet the criteria for obscenity, which is called the Miller test. And that's what protects the library and the librarians and us, taxpayers, everyone, from it just being a quirky kind of opinion that somebody has about a certain book. So the books that would be restricted if HB 314 passes in a future year needs to pass this test, as I understand it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Want people to understand that it's a three-pronged test, and all of those prongs need to be met, each one. And then if they are all met, then the book would be obscene. So what's the Miller test? Just so people know, it's not this, oh, anybody can walk in and say, oh, I don't like that book, I'm going to sue you.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Well, in a nutshell, in order for material to be considered obscene, it has to appeal to an excessive interest in sexual matters, often referred to as a prurient interest. And in the case of children, same thing. So these books need to contain either depictions or written words about graphic sexual conduct. They describe in more detail what that type of conduct is. So nudity, but not Renaissance art. We're talking nudity that's sexual and likely to get somebody sexually aroused, even if that's a child.
The description that I have here is it describes the book sexual conduct in a patently offensive way.
Right.
That the community would agree this is offensive.
Right. The community standard, reasonable person, very typical in the law.
Right.
The third prong of the Miller test is where the wiggle room comes in for lawyers. And that is that when you're looking at the work as a whole, you can say that these images and this book as a whole have no artistic, political, scientific, or literary value. They lack that value.
Right. Or on the positive side, they do have literary value. Like somebody wrote to the editor, Huck Finn, Huck Finn was going to be. Well, I think I understand what some people might find offensive, a few words in Huck Finn, but there's literary value.
Absolutely.
So that's protected. The other one is artistic, and you already mentioned, Renaissance art, Michelangelo's David. I mean, that's protected.
Yes, it is.
Because it's accepted to be artistic, political, and even science. So anatomy charts and things that would be used in science, they're all allowed. They're all good. It's the human body.
Exactly.
So those are allowed to be under this definition.
And the Miller test is, the case is somewhat old, and certainly it preceded some of the books that we're seeing in the library now that are different. They're just different than what one might have expected when you were looking at this back then, when the Supreme Court was looking at this. And I can only describe them as, certainly as a child sex crimes prosecutor and a molest prosecutor looking at these images, even in a memoir,
but
that there's no need for.
But it's not even your opinion as an experienced attorney. It still has to meet the probative value of the Miller test, period.
Correct. It's
library,
a legal standard.
For us, it's a legal standard.
Yes.
The other thing that I think is legal that you spoke to at the forum, and I want the audience to hear it, is that your opponent, Susan Shea, said repeatedly that the obscene material was protected under the First Amendment right in our Constitution of freedom of speech. And it's my understanding that that is not true.
You are correct. She is wrong.
All right.
Obscenity is not protected. Let's go back to our highway.
Yep.
Once we drive along the pornography highway far enough to obscenity, we're no longer protected by the First Amendment. And obscenity has never been protected by it, nor has libel, for that example.
How long ago did the United States Supreme Court decide that obscenity was not protected under our constitutional right to freedom of speech?
Well, the Miller case was in 1973, but it was not the first. So there were cases that went well before that, although I don't have them at my fingertips here, but I have read them.
I have 1952, but I don't know that that's just what I read, if that sounds. But
That sounds right,
it
yes.
It was like 60, 70 years ago that it was ruled to not be protected by freedom of speech. So I have to tell you, I'm a little bit confused of how time after time people in the Daily Bee can write and your challenger can speak and say, it's our freedom of speech is being taken away.
My opinion is they don't have a factual basis to support their position, so they resort to hyperbole and headlines, like the banned book claim. We're not banning books. We've never suggested banning books. Not that one member of the Library Board of Trustees ever, at any meeting, has ever stopped a citizen who's accusing us of banning books and said, let's just get back to the argument at hand. They're not talking about banning books, so let's not go down that rabbit hole. And
you've also been accused of wanting to burn books.
Yes. Well, that's their way of calling you a Nazi without actually calling you a Nazi, because everyone knows once somebody's calling you a Nazi, it tells you right there, I've got no rational argument. So
to be clear, you also don't want to burn books.
I do not want to burn books. I do not want to ban books.
What is your resolution then for the issue of obscene material that is not to be allowed around minors? Or anyone, actually,
in
the library. What's your resolution for that?
Well, a group of friends and I have been proposing for almost 3/4 of a year now, take the books that meet this obscenity standard, that have the graphic sexual images, put them in an age-controlled area. We have volunteered to staff it so it doesn't impact library staff or financials. Any parent may come and sign a permission slip and say, my child can check this book out. Here's why this is beneficial, and here's why it makes sense. At every board meeting, the library tells us it is the parent's responsibility to supervise the books their children reads. However, the library policy for unattended children has no age or time limit. Parents are at work when the kids get out of school, so you see the children pour in after school, and they're obviously there unattended. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say it's the parent's job and then let children run freely throughout the be freely throughout the library and still want the parent to handle the situation. The parent is trusting the library. The library has an air of legitimacy, as for those of us who have been going since we could read. And that air of legitimacy gives the parents a certain trust that their children will not be exposed to graphic sexual images that they can't unsee. It protects the library from the new HB 314, whatever name that it will have, or SB whatever, because that will show that the library has taken reasonable measures to restrict access to these books to minors. And as I've mentioned to the library board, it's coming. The bill is coming in some form or another. Wouldn't it be best to get ahead of it and try to craft a solution that both protects the children, protects the parent, and protects the library?
All right. We are going to take a break right now. We're up against it, and we're going to do that, and we'll be right back.
Are you ready for the Lost in the 50s weekend? Gripshin Tire Pros is ready to help kick off the festivities with their annual Customer Appreciation Party, Friday, May 19th, starting at 4 o'clock. Gomi's free, infamous Al Pastor tacos will be served, and there's also lots of giveaways, music, games, and a whole lot of fun. Bring a lawn chair and cooler with a beverage of your choice. Come for the free tacos, stay for the parade. That's Lost in the 50s, Friday at Gripshin Tire Pros, division at Highway 2.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
All new spring deals are here at Lowe's. Start planting your garden this weekend with Bonnie 11.8-ounce vegetables. Buy four for $10. Plus, liven up your patios and decks with fresh blooms. Select 1.5-gallon hanging baskets or two for $20. Lowe's knows spring. Lowe's knows home improvement. Offers valid through 5/17, in-store only. Actual plant size and selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
Everybody, welcome in. We've got it going on here for you today with Stacy Rodriguez. She is the challenging candidate for a trustee board seat on the East Bonner County Library Board. As I announced earlier, the incumbent, Susan Shea, was, of course, invited in person, and texts and phone calls to follow up. And she accepted, and then as of yesterday, she declined. And when I texted her back to ask why, she refused, apparently, to answer. She didn't see the text to get back to me. So Stacy is here on her own, and we are talking about the library. And so you were talking earlier about your experience as an attorney and how you can bring that skill set and that mindset, really, in a way, to the board. What are some of the other activities that you have or that you've done that you believe qualify you to sit on the board?
Since my earliest memories, most of the most significant took place in a library. My mother worked nights and consequently slept it the day, so I was at the library a lot. Books are my passion. And with a single mom and three kids, we couldn't buy the books, so I went to the library. And I was there throughout all of my education, certainly there during law school, but the books weren't quite as fun. But I never stopped reading even then. And I began tutoring at the library as soon as I was old enough. I tutored English as a second language. I tutored English as a first language. I joined the Friends of the Library. I love the library. I went to any fundraiser they had throughout my young adult career and adult career. And then as I got to Sandpoint, immediately I searched for the library, and I almost fainted when I saw how beautiful it was. And I began tutoring. After I think I went through three or maybe four directors of the Lifelong Learning Center, but Mike Bauer, our most recent one before Frank, used to call me up for the toughest of students, the ones that really had difficult problems socially, home lives, academically, whatever they were. And I loved it. I loved helping them read, because reading is knowledge and knowledge is power, and it's the great equalizer. It doesn't matter what your background is. If you're educated, you could go after anything you want. And the library, that's what it's made for. It's there to educate and to make literate our population. It's to inspire and engage people and have community gatherings and community information and resources available that you couldn't possibly provide on your own.
I've talked to the library several times. Of course, Victor's been here, and different supervisors, about the lifelong learning, and the children's area, and the reading groups. So, what would you say as a board member would be your fiscal priorities, that you would be the top things that you want to make sure that the library is really directing their funds toward?
First, of course, I would like to make sure that the collection that was curated was in good shape. So a lot of books, and I understand they go through a lot of hands. That's a great thing. But they get in really ratty conditions. And sometimes you go, for example, this year we were looking up a lot of philosophy regarding social contract theory for my daughter, whom I homeschool. She's a junior. Just took the AP Calc exam yesterday. And we were looking for things on Rousseau and Locke. And there was quite a limited selection. The books were really old and antiquated. I was looking for some things maybe a little more up to date, but they weren't there. And maybe that's an obscure kind of area that people don't look at very much. So I would want to make sure that we had our books that we collected in good shape. Secondly, I would like to make sure that in the Lifelong Learning Center, we were reaching out to all people of need. As I mentioned at the forum, Sandpoint High, a lovely high school, there's still a 35% of the student body who doesn't read proficiently. I'd like to see what else the library can do to help that problem, because we need a literate populace. And finally, when we get to certain fiscal priorities, again, I'm not on the board. I know the library, looking at their financials, is pretty flush with cash. And so, for example, the bookmobile that we just got, that was the 2023 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter bookmobile, I don't know that that's indicative or illustrative of Bonner County. Maybe of Sandpoint City, but I don't know that it's illustrative of Bonner County. And just little questions. I don't have all the details, but I noticed 2023 Car and Driver, they list the base price for that Sprinter Mercedes-Benz as $64,000 and change. Our base price was $86,000 and change. Why? Where did that $22,000 come from? I couldn't figure it out from the invoice. And this Sprinter van is half the size of the current bookmobile, which I understand is very old. But as far as the amount of books that you can put on it, it looks to be half, if that. It has lots of bells and whistles. It has technology, and it has a big screen on the outside and an awning and all these things. But it seems like kind of a shiny plaything versus a library on wheels. And also, if it's well maintained, 10 years. That's what the manufacturer says is its life expectancy, if well maintained. So are we going to spend $250,000 every 10 years to replace this vehicle?
So I'm hearing that you're in favor of a bookmobile as a concept, but if you had been on the board, you might have had a few questions about this recent purchase that might have been a little bit more, I don't know, maybe a better price or something else. And maybe after all was said and done, you would have ended up at the same place. But you bring questions to this process is what I'm hearing.
That's absolutely correct, Barbara. I noticed that in going through the board packets that they solicited bids for this with pages and pages of things this van should have. And two people didn't fill out the paperwork completely, so they were discounted. So it brought it down to two. I guess in my mind, in this day and age, if you're going to spend $250,000, you should have more choices than two.
Keeping it in the fiscal, what would be some of the things, if anything, that you would maybe lower the priority on, not spend as much money in certain areas? And I know this is hard when you are not sitting on the board with some more experience, but what might be areas that you would not eliminate necessarily, but maybe put at a lower priority?
Certainly. The virtual reality lab that we have now, at least from my looking through the paperwork, looked like it was about $50,000 plus the salary of the gentleman that runs it. And I was reading an article in the paper that said you can land a plane in this virtual reality experience, which sounds really fun for a lot of people. But it to me, that would be a lower priority than making sure our curation, our books, were in good shape. We have a garden. And I think gardens are great, and community gardens are all over the place. But now we're hiring a gardener to take care of the garden. That seems to me like to call out for volunteers, friends of the library, friends of the garden of the library to take care of.
Kids.
Yeah, that could be an educational experience to teach them to maintain it.
Yeah. You haven't mentioned staffing. If staffing is pretty much on point from as far as you can see, whether we need a couple of more staff members or whether we're staffed at a pretty good rate right now.
Honestly, I don't feel that I have the data to make that determination. And I, God forbid, I would insult any staff member at the library. I do know that their pay was raised, their COLA allowance was raised quite a bit. And maybe that just brings them in onto par with other salaries in the area. My own mathematical computations seems like it's a little bit higher than what would be average, but I really don't have enough data, I think, to make a reasoned decision about that at this time.
All right, real good. Well, we're up against another break. We are going to take that right now. It's our last break, so stay right where you are.
Take living to the next level at Under the Sun in downtown Bonners Ferry. Come shop with friends and enjoy lunch in the bistro with its wonderful food selection, plus beer and wine, and the espresso bar with its organic coffee and more. Downstairs, you can explore the new women's consignment clothing boutique, Handpicked, open at 9 a.m. Monday through Saturday. Under the Sun, where the sun is always shining.
With your choice of select sandwich, nugs, fries, and a drink, Wendy's $5 Biggie Bag is your go-to. Your nugget wingman. Your hot and crispy fry co-pilot.
Just like us. We're like the bag boys.
What?
Bag boys, bag boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when we bring your food?
For a deal you can count on, bet on Biggie and choose wisely. Choose Wendy's.
Bag boys, bag boys.
U.S. price participation may vary. Includes choice of double stack JBC or crispy chicken sandwich with four-piece nugs, junior fry, and small soft drink. Third-party delivery pricing may be higher.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, call SelectQuote at 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050. Or go to SelectQuote.com. 1-800-452-5050. That's 1-800-452-5050.
SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
If you have ever thought about remodeling your bathroom but were worried it would take too long or cost too much, then stop worrying. Right now, Jacuzzi Bath Remodel has designed a collection of high-quality custom products and perfected the one-day remodeling experience so you can enjoy your new bathroom faster than ever before. It's a worry-free bath remodel from the most trusted brand name in the business, Jacuzzi. For a virtual or in-home appointment, call 800-826-9895. That's 800-826-9895. 800-826-9895.
Discover credit cards automatically double all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year, which means...
Wait, hold up. Question for the audio engineer.
Go ahead.
Did I read that right? Discover automatically doubles all your cash back?
Yeah, that's what the script says.
So if I get a Discover card right now, I can earn twice the cash back.
Apparently. Wait! Unlimited first-year cash back match, only from Discover. See terms and learn more at discover.com/match.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Everybody, welcome back in. As you know, we're talking today with Stacy Rodriguez. She's on your ballot coming up May 16th, and she is asking for your vote to be on Bonner County Board of Trustees. And we were just talking on the break that this is not just a Sandpoint voter group. This is all of East Bonner County, right?
Yes, all of East Bonner County, a lot of people don't know, but all of East Bonner County votes on this issue, votes on this position.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's important. So it's not just Sandpoint, even though I live in Sandpoint. I'm voting as a Sandpoint resident after so many years in Hope. I'm alarmed at the level of hate and just this disruptive language that's been in our local paper. And so this is Barbara speaking right now, okay? Not Stacy. I don't speak for Stacy. This is me. And there was a letter that called your supporters ignorant Christian right fascists. And if anybody is going to get offended, I'm offended. I'm offended whether I'm a believer or not. To call people who want to simply restrict access to books that are ruled to be obscene, not by a parent, but by law, ignorant Christian right fascists is a very hateful thing to say. I understand you're getting a lot of hate on your Facebook page.
That's correct. Lots of name calling. I'm not a good lawyer, obviously, they say. Personal attacks, at door knocking. They've told my daughter, my 17-year-old, that I'm no good, that I'm a bad mother, because I want to do what I want to do to protect the children at the library.
It's interesting to me that the letters that are supportive of you in the paper have only just been supportive of you. They have not said, as far as I've read, anything negative about Susan Shea, except that they disagree with her position on allowing obscene material in the open area of the library where any child can go find and see.
That's correct, Barbara. I made it quite clear from the time we very first started into this endeavor that it wasn't about, it's not name calling. We're not going to roll in the mud. If you have something to say about Susan that's true and factual, you may say it, but there will be no personal attacks on her or anybody supporting her, because that's not right.
Some of the other letters, you are supposed to be disruptive and divisive, and you want to censor books and control the choices of what people read. Is that true?
No, that is not true. That sounds like verbiage straight out of the American Library Association website. Any type of moving a book is considered censorship / banning in their view, and our library is quite familiar with their view, since every library policy except unattended children cites the ALA as its basis and is lifted from their website verbatim.
Another letter states that wanting to restrict books that are ruled to be obscene by law into, not out of the library, in the library, but just to restrict them. They call that radical politics. But here's the one that got me, Stacy. Your supporters are called militant right-wing, a militant right-wing contingent trying to scare us into letting them control our freedoms. Now, that's harsh. That's brutal. You know, their freedoms. I don't know what freedoms they're talking about, because you've already established for us that obscenity is not protected under the freedom of speech. So I don't know what freedom they're talking about. How do you respond to that?
I just say that I actually respond with a question, Barbara. Why? What is the positive benefit for children to see graphically sexual images? What would be an adult's purpose in wanting them to see those images without a parent's consent? And as the library has told us, that parental consent is very important to them. My solution solves those problems. The books are not banned. They're not burned. They are in the library, and a parent can say, my child can have this book. It's a win for everyone, and it's reasonable. It's a compromise. It's not a political scheme. It's not some right-wing fascist conspiracy. It's simply trying to protect children, which is what I've done my entire life.
You know, it is interesting. Words are so important, and getting at the truth sometimes seems very difficult. But I think some of the take-home messages today that I'd like to hear you comment on again is the first issue of freedom of speech. That is not the issue here. And yet it's been throughout these letters that you personally want to take away, or people who support you want to take away, the right freedom of speech. Not true.
Obviously not true. They if there were no freedom of speech, they couldn't write these letters to the editor.
Well, in the library, but
in the library, it's just not true. Obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment. It never has been. And nobody is saying that other rights should be restricted.
You know, it's interesting. I learned something today. I didn't realize that pornography was okay for adults, that it is lawful, and it is protected under freedom of speech. But obscenity is a whole different legal definition, and obscenity is not legal for adults or children.
Correct.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. I thought it was just adults, that they kind of meant the same thing, and it was okay for adults but not for minors. So thank you for that. We need to hear this clarity in what our laws really are.
Yes. The law, Idaho has statutes that prohibit distribution of obscenity, and they have specific laws that prohibit distribution of obscenity to minors.
The other thing is that I think is important for our listeners to understand as they make up their mind as to who to vote for is that you are in no way advocating that any parent parent or not can walk into the library and just on their own opinion say, I don't like that book. You know, get that book out or get that book restricted. That's not the way even what you're talking about, and that's not the proposal that's before the voter.
That's correct. The library has a policy where a parent can come in and request a book or challenge a book and ask that it be reviewed for whatever reasons the parents say. And I presume that the library would then look to the law as it stands and make a decision. I'm not suggesting that any parent could walk in. I don't want any books about Harry Potter, or I don't want any books about the Roaring Twenties or anything like that. You could never. It's way too broad.
Yeah. And we won't go through the Miller test again, but there is a test on this. You know, of all the questions that I did, and I want my audience to know all of these questions, I had prepared the same ones for Susan Shea to comment on, and she's not here to do that. But here's a question that I really wanted to ask Susan, what her resolution was regarding obscene materials in the library. You know, there are obscene materials in the library. They are against the law. They don't have anything to do about freedom of speech. So what was her resolution to deal with this? And, of course, she's not here to answer that, and I don't expect any of you to answer for her, of course, and certainly not me. But I did really want to understand what her resolution was. All right, we're down to 30 seconds or so. Say goodbye to the audience and wrap it up for me.
Thank you, Barbara. Goodbye, everybody. I hope that you'll vote for me on May 16th. I want to protect your children and keep our library a safe place for our entire community. And children are part of that community. They deserve to be innocent and enjoy the library just as I did when I grew up.
All right, that's the last word for today. Thanks for being with us. Next Tuesday, we will have an in-depth interview with Dave Lotz of the Bonner County Chaplains, whose motto is a proactive ministry of presence in Bonner County. I love that. The men and women of our chaplain corps, they are there with whatever is needed, and they're great people. So until then, this is Barbara saying, please take care and may God richly bless you, my friends.